Get ready. Get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right, everyone, we're back. Another episode, Nonprofit Insider Podcast. It's been a minute since I did an interview. It's been a minute. You all remember when I was talking about I'm getting into interviews, but I wanted to do it right. And when you start getting some heavy hitters like we have today, that just lets you know we are serious here at the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. I'm going to introduce them here in a second. Be sure to follow us if you haven't already on Instagram. You can follow us on Reddit. Funny enough, I do a lot of Reddit stuff. Follow us on TikTok as well. You can kind of check us out there. And if you ever have any questions, just email me, thenonprofitinsiderpodcast@gmail.com. We are really getting into that holiday season. It's getting a little bit colder. We want to hear more nonprofit horror stories. So be sure to reach out to us that way. Look, let's not waste any time. Mega guest today, Why did I say that?
And, you know, we can fix it in post. What? It's fine.
No, it's super funny, right?
Dana Scully. Yeah. I think of Dana Scully, X-Files. That's what you
X-Files remember. X-Files, if people don't know. Dana Litwin. I think it's because my son's home today, Dana. And so, you know, they kind of mess it up. I'm here with Dana Litwin. Dana Litwin Consulting. Dana, how you doing today? How you feeling?
I'm doing great, Swim. It's great to talk to you today again. We've had some other conversations, some on my channel and many offline. And I'm just excited to finally be on your show and our friend Jessica Pang Parks, the JPP herself, getting us introduced. And, you know, the magic happens.
Absolutely. A shout out to JPP and shout out to a lot of people in our space. When you're talking volunteering, you're talking nonprofit work, everything that comes to it. Listen, I kind of want to get into it, Dana, because you have been a consultant for a long time, so you're able to speak a little bit more freely than most. So let's start with this. From your perch, from your point of view, what is the state of nonprofits in America right now?
I think the state of nonprofits in America is high anxiety, higher than normal because of targeted budget cuts at the federal level, and then that kind of trickling to the local level, and also targeted attacks on certain kinds of nonprofits, both from a tax status of legislation that our government's in a shutdown right now, and we're recording this, so nothing's happening right now. But there's been a lot of potential legislation. Some has gotten close to passing. Some has been, you know, defeated by a narrow margin so far. Some has gone through. Some has not. That really directly targets and threatens nonprofits doing good in the world. And there's particularly legislation that is trying to take away the essential nonprofit, nonpartisan status of most nonprofits because, you know, at least in the USA here, for your listeners, however wide around the world they are, that, you know, tax status is pretty important to nonprofits, and also being nonpartisan, unless they're a different kind of PAC, political action committee, is also usually pretty important to nonprofits. And so the fact that at the federal level, there's, you know, huge cuts, damaging the economy, tariffs, all these things all collectively have a pretty serious impact on the majority of nonprofits, whatever their size, but certainly, you know, smaller nonprofits or maybe all volunteer nonprofits with smaller budgets are really feeling the pinch right now, especially if they've relied on AmeriCorps services, which again right now are suspended, but are being really severely cut in upcoming budgets potentially, and really reorganized as an agency. And, you know, it's kind of, it's spooky, scary Halloween times, and not just in October when we're recording.
And it's funny because you're talking with nonprofit leaders darn near every day in your practice. I mean, you're talking to people from San Francisco to Miami, Seattle to Portland, Maine. I mean,
around the world. Yeah.
Internationally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are your clients and associates saying right now about what is happening in their respective nonprofit sector?
Most of them are busier than ever. If they have anything in the States, especially, but again, you know, it's a global economy that we're all in at this point in time and space. So things that happen in the States, you know, politically or financially, economically, eventually do have ripples, some more immediate than others in other areas of the world. But particularly here in the States, which we'll kind of focus on today. It's, you know, there's when there's cuts to government services and, you know, food bank donations and funding, that means that nonprofits have to step more into a space that they're already probably under-resourced and underfunded to do. So what I'm seeing across all kinds of services, animal services, more people are having to abandon animals because of economic situations. So that's impacting animal welfare. Shelters are overcrowded. Food banks are underfunded and undersupplied with more and more demand. So there's, you know, across any type of human service, environmental services are very strained. They're not sure what's going to be, you know, legal or illegal soon, or regulations going to change. So again, there's, you know, there's this huge kind of bomb that's dropped in different sectors. Some sectors that are on the more favorable list of this particular administration, certain kinds of faith-based sectors, they're doing okay because the light is shining on them and they're kind of the favorites right now. But that can also have its own kind of backlash where if people are complying in advance or capitulating or actively supporting the harm that this administration is doing, that has its own kind of backlash within the community and within donors and volunteers who maybe no longer want to align themselves with a certain faith-based groups or certain kinds of nonprofits that have traditionally been aligned with, you know, the party that's in power right now. So I'm just seeing a lot of instability and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of anxiety around those issues.
Again, you're able to speak so much more freely. Join with Dana Corey Litwin, Dana Litwin Consulting, because you're saying some things. I've had previous guests on, and you're saying some things that honestly, even folks like myself, maybe don't feel comfortable saying, but you're in such a great position that you're kind of telling it like it is. I want to ask you a little bit more about the money piece.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned high anxiety is really kind of the state of nonprofits right now. We know some of the aspects of funding in a nonprofit space can... We can sometimes be beholden to our donors, right?
Exactly.
That's why they say diversify, because if 50% of your money is coming from one source, you can kind of bend yourself or bend the mission, or you yourself are bending backwards for that particular dollar. Talk a little bit more about the money piece. When you're talking to your clients, you're talking to your associates, are they just not having the money? They're just unsure about it? What is it that you're kind of seeing?
Well, I'm working right now with a client on an AmeriCorps planning grant, and AmeriCorps has already been slashed quite a bit this year, so that's added uncertainty to our project, and it's added uncertainty if, you know, even if we're successful completing the planning grant, kind of turning in our homework as it is to AmeriCorps, right now it's suspended. You know, when a government is shut down, when a president is talking about cutting specific national service models that have been bipartisan since their creation, then that, you know, it's very easy to see that, okay, that's a partisan attack. It's an unearned attack. There's no reason to attack these other than just spite and political pawn power plays. So when you talk about funding for national service, there's so many different kinds of AmeriCorps programs, but that's a specific case where, you know, we've had to do a lot of scenario planning with this client, and we're ending up in a very different end result than what we thought we would do when we started because of these changes, because of this political high temperature in the country right now, of this kind of very specific divisiveness that's coming from you know, one source or a few sources that are at the top and in power punching down to just normal people trying to live their lives and nonprofits just trying to do good community service like they've always done for a long time. And again, ideally in a nonpartisan way that anyone who needs food gets food and, you know, anyone who needs shelter being homeless gets shelter being homeless. So when you put political energy of a really destructive kind behind that targeting and eliminate or cut the budget of or threaten to eliminate entire federal agencies, or that's already been in progress with DOGE and other things, causing a lot of damage, that's really impacting every American's lives. Even if you think, oh, I'm in the safe group, I'm in the group that thought I supported this. No. That's not how this works. The badness comes for everybody. The bad times come for everybody. Sinking all boats doesn't make the ocean higher. It's quite the opposite. You want to raise the ocean to raise all boats. And that's not what's happening. So from a funding perspective, I keep having to report back to this client because I'm part of the America Service Coalition, America Service Commission's coalition members. So I'm in monthly meetings with my friend and colleague, Kyra Esgate and things. Even, when there's been shutdowns or pauses or cuts to government funding, I kind of have to report back to this client of like, this is the chances of success of getting an operational grant to do the thing we're planning. They keep lowering and lowering and lowering. We can keep trying, but the bucket for that is either going to go away completely or be cut to the point that it's going to be very hard to fund things that communities have been relying on for years and years, and in many cases decades, as a core social safety net or service that are just going away.
Yeah, it almost feels like we know it's a ripple effect.
It is. It's absolutely a ripple effect. Yeah,
we're all feeling it. And it's super funny talking about that money piece. It's also connected to that, the anxiety piece, then that money piece. I don't know if it's just me, but do you feel like everyone is getting laid off right now? Or is it just me?
Yeah, because I think if I didn't work for myself, I'd probably be laid off. I feel like.
Well, every time, and that's the thing. Every time I'm on LinkedIn,
it's awful.
Open to work. I mean, people that we both know in this industry, I mean, they're employed today. They're let go tomorrow. I mean, it's because of this ripple effect, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely, this is a choice. Economic decisions, policy decisions are somebody's choice. And when they're a more centralized power and individual's choice who's trying to unconstitutionally grab all the power, that makes it more confusing because norms and laws in the Constitution are being broken. And there's so much uncertainty that feeds into the budget woes where I've had clients that have had to, I'm on retainer with several clients. So one of my retainer clients had to drop me because their volunteer services budget got cut by 47% in January with their leadership anticipating federal cuts that some came into effect and some did not. But this, because it was earlier in the year and there was so much uncertainty, a lot of nonprofit leaders are having to make extremely difficult, again, high anxiety decisions about if, like you said, if they don't have a diversity of funding, if they're counting on a certain foundation or federal grants that have been the norm of funding for them, and a percentage of that or all of that goes away, then really difficult decisions have to be made. And what I'm seeing with organizational leadership right now that's leading to layoffs, many, many of my friends and colleagues have lost work. Some of them have been even on my Priceless Advice YouTube channel, my video series that I do, that's a podcast and video series. And that ripple effect is making executive leaders panic and cut budgets or cut volunteer services. And I'm seeing the same mistakes being made now in 2025 that I saw in early 2020 and 2021 at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. I'm seeing the same reactionary panic, either complying or we need to take stuff off our website before we get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And my answer has been the same all year. Do not comply in advance.
Do not comply in advance.
Do not
say that one more time, please.
Do, for the people in the back, turn up your volume to 11. This one goes up to 11. Never comply in advance with any kind of authoritarian type of power grab, whether that's micro in your organization, someone's power hungry just within your organization aside from politics and they're being nasty about it. Yeah, don't comply in advance. But on the national level, Americans are in a very serious situation right now where there's so much uncertainty economically that organizational leaders are like, I don't even know if we're going to have a budget at all July 1st of by next year. Or, you know, we did have a 47%. We cut our budget 47%. And then it turns out we lost 60% of our funding. So those are the kinds of things that I'm seeing rippling out that are causing people I know in real life to be laid off. I'm in San Francisco. We were kind of talking about the weather before we hit record. but I'm in Silicon Valley, and I know I have a lot of tech friends and family who are deep into the tech world, who have been in it for years or decades. I have people in, you know, the entertainment industry and special effects. I have friends and family in gaming and special effects. So we've seen layoffs in those other private industries for the last few years, as AI is being used as wage replacement, as talent replacement, as creative replacement. So there's several things kind of happening at once to several sectors that didn't used to impact each other, but now they're all so serious and they've expanded the harm so far in so many directions by company decisions, corporate decisions, political decisions, that we're really in a pretty serious state of flux and limbo and uncertainty in so many industries that I'm just very fortunate for the position and privilege that I have, that my wife and I, you know, made a decision in 2018 that in 2019, in the before times, I would go into consulting full time. I had enough clients. I was working full time and taking on clients slowly but surely. And it got to a point where I need to do one or the other of these things full time. And I think it's time to believe in myself and invest in myself. But that was a serious financial decision that we had to make, not knowing what would happen in the pandemic. Turns out I was, you know, busier than ever, just remote and online, because a lot of people recognized that they needed help in this unprecedented situation, you know, with COVID in 2020 and beyond. And now we're in a new, awful, unprecedented situation. So I'm getting a lot of asks. I'm getting a lot of asks from African colleagues all of a sudden, too, which I'm not expected, because that's not one of my specialties or areas that I know much about. And I'm doing my best to answer and refer to, you know, colleagues that are, you know, more geographically close or familiar with what's going on in different African countries, because they're not just coming from one country or another. So it's really interesting. On one hand, I'm getting more people asking me questions, but in the last couple of years, I've done my best to do whatever, you know, pro bono advice I can, but my pro bono calendar has just been packed. And at a certain point, I have to draw a line and say, I can give you, you know, a half hour Zoom and some free advice. But, you know, there are a lot of people contacting me where their organizations don't have the funds to really have a consultant. And I do my best to point them towards all sorts of free resources that are online for self-education. That's something. At least it's something. It's never as good as, you know, expert one-on-one coaching or consulting or advice. But I'm just seeing more and more need for information around community engagement, volunteer engagement, funding, technology than I've ever seen before.
Yeah, you are a true thought leader in this space. You have the respect and the ear of a lot of people. So I know you're just getting some really high-end level insights. Again, not just nationally, but internationally. I want to ask you a little bit later. I'm going to do a commercial break here in a bit, but I'm going to ask you after commercial break a little bit about consulting, because I know we have some folks that are interested in that type of field. Mm-hmm. But I want to stick with the jobs piece a little bit, because yes. I recently did an episode titled Second Jobs and Side Hustles in the Nonprofit Space. That was episode 68 here of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Go back, listen to that. I had a lot of people message me about that, Dana.
Mm-hmm.
Probably I had more people message me about that than pretty much every other episode that I've had right now. And I want to get your take. I want to get your opinion. What is your take on so many people in the nonprofit industry having second jobs because they can't make ends meet? Or conversely, people feeling they need to have a side hustle to stay relevant?
It's the economy.
For those that don't know that reference, just type that in. I don't think a lot of people will know that right
off the
jump.
It's a little obscure, but the economy. It really does boil down to policy decisions, and we've had many decades of policy decisions and just enculturation in the West, and particularly North America, you know, where most of my business is based, that devalues any sort of work that helps somebody else. We like to talk about it. We like to wear pins about it. We like to wave flags about it. But when it gets down to it, our economy is run on the last few years. It's really run on data extraction. It's run on, you know, information bartering instead of kind of more stable economic things of, you know, production, manufacturing. This isn't economics 101, but it does boil down to this has been a problem of underfunded, underpaid nonprofit people my entire life. When I started, I was like $36,000 a year in 2002. With Project Open Handers, it was like $38,000. And I was like, oh my God, almost $40,000. And these days I see listings get sent to me of like, hey, can you share this? And it is not much better 20, 25 years later. Like there's really been a stagnation in wages across the board. I mean, seriously, across the board. The minimum wage hasn't been raised. I'm in California, so we're doing a little bit better where we raise, you know, a statewide minimum wage gets raised and the cost of living here is very high. And we kind of, to our credit, do our best to balance that out. But it's been a problem for a long time. And what I've noticed is in the rise of the gig economy and the ability to do something like deliver groceries, drive a car for people, you know, do online, whatever extra gig economy stuff, I'm just watching it be a necessity for most working people because they're just not getting paid enough, especially in nonprofits. And since we're recording in October, for Halloween time, I'll tell you about a joke of a spirit, you know, the memes of the spirit Halloween costumes that don't really exist, but they kind of put them on the package.
I do love those.
My favorite that's been making that makes the rounds this time, this season every year is, nonprofit executive, and it's, you know, usually a middle-aged white woman who looks like me or maybe more gray hair, and it says, you know, features a spouse that makes enough money for them to survive, you know, features work suits that are 5 years out of fashion, you know, features earnest and high anxiety, overworked personality. So, you know, it's a joke, it's a meme, but everything that's funny, you know, there's truth in comedy. That's what really makes people laugh. And I have experience, you know, in stand-up comedy, in improv comedy, in acting earlier in my life, which we'll get to after the commercial, but some other commercial break. But that's really been true that, you know, very much you're either living not very far away from a poverty line or lower class, or maybe you're struggling to be middle class, but you either have family money as a safety net or whoever your partner or spouse is. It may be quote unquote, this is the other joke in nonprofits, like, oh, my wife has a real job. My partner has a real job. But those words have power. And so if we're talking about ourselves as like, this isn't a real job, or we're devaluing ourselves with jokes, as much as I like that meme as anybody and I share it, that's something to pay attention to about how we talk about ourselves and how we advocate for ourselves and how we advocate for our sector. And I've been really, really excited and pleased to see not just the National Council of Nonprofits, independent sector, Amidarv Idealist, it's just merged with Volunteer Match this year, really publicly speaking out and speaking truth to power and saying, what is going on with policy choices and political rhetoric and stochastic rhetoric, this is not okay, and it's hurting everybody. If you think you're safe from it, it's coming for you. You know, you've probably, people have been economically hit in rural areas, you know, losing healthcare, losing food stamps, losing any kind of other human services. And it's really to everybody's benefit to be more cooperative than to be divisive or competitive. But this is a moment where we do have to speak truth to power. And I'm going to use every cell of my white skin and a little bit, whatever little bit of wealth and privilege I have, to talk about it. And I'm glad that I can freely talk about it, and I don't feel like I have to bow down to a board of directors or a boss or lose my job if I'm talking truthfully about, you know, the dire circumstances that the country's in right now on purpose. Doesn't have to be this way. It's on purpose. It's a choice.
Yeah. It's real out here.
It's getting too real out here.
Yeah, I want to give a quick shout out to one of my friends, Sandra Darling Roberts. We used to work together, and she was one of the first people that really, working as a coworker, talked about the power of labor. She studied labor, yep, at her college, yep, and how we cannot devalue labor and what we provide to society, and the work that we do is just simply too important. Listen, I want to take a pause here. This has been a jam-packed first start. I want to take a quick commercial break. You're going to hear from today's sponsor in JPP. You're going to hear about her in a second, and we'll come back with Dana.
Hey, it's Jessica Pang Parks from learnwithjpp.com. Did you catch my conversation with Swim on the Nonprofit Insider podcast a few weeks ago? Check it out now to learn my insights as a volunteer engagement thought leader. As the principal consultant at Learn with JPP, I work with nonprofits who give a care to build trust, create impact, and inspire belonging through ethical volunteer engagement frameworks. Want to jumpstart or grow your volunteer engagement journey? Right now, I'm offering Nonprofit Insider listeners 10% off of my one-on-one coaching sessions. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching. That's learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter InsiderPod at checkout. That's InsiderPod, all one word, on learnwithjpp.com/coaching. This offer applies to the first 5 people who use the code InsiderPod. I'm here to help you solve that urgent challenge you're facing around board member engagement, grow professionally as a leader of volunteers, or realign processes with your organizational values. Go to learnwithjpp.com/coaching and enter InsiderPod, all one word, to claim this exclusive offer.
Once again, I'm joined with Dana Corey Litwin, principal owner of Dana Litwin Consulting. I just want to acknowledge this. I still feel so terrible that I messed up your name in the beginning. I don't know. How does that happen?
You know what? I don't, wow. You know, here's the thing. I'm Gen X. I'm named Dana. There aren't a lot of us. There's more people of, I think, in millennial or zennial, like, you know, maybe people born in like late 70s or 80s. So I just, again, like I said in the beginning, Dana, if you know anything about the X-Files, Dana Scully. But I've also learned over the years, mm-hmm, in living in California, that people with different regional accents, people with, you know, English is not their first language, then I've gone through so many pronunciations of D-A-N-A that I just kind of roll with it. Like, even, you know, colleagues in Australia, they're like, well, Dana, how are you doing tonight? And I'm like, I'm great, you know. And another shrimp on the Barbie. We're good. So it's just, you know, it's not anything that ever hurts my feelings. When people add extra letters, that gets interesting. Like, oh, suddenly I'm Diana or, you know, Danae or something. But don't worry about it. It happens all the time, and it doesn't bother me. It just turns into a giggle moment, and I do my Dana Scully joke and reference. It's all good. Yeah.
Well, I do appreciate it, because I'm practicing these questions all week, and then it's like you come out the gate and you fumble, and you're like, "Am I even alive? What am I?
Have I had enough caffeine today? What time is it?"
Let's talk about your consulting business. These days, you know, I can imagine to a large degree, volunteer engagement is a big specialty of your consulting. Mm-hmm. But take me into the world of running a consulting business like yours in the year 2025? What does that look like?
Well, I'm a sole proprietor. Now I can speak words. me talk pretty today. Me talk good. That it's, if you're doing it on your own as a business, it's running a small business. It's getting a tax status. It's doing paperwork. It's, doing your taxes in maybe a different way than you did before. But the business itself is like, hey, man, it's the hustle economy. There's advertising, there's word of mouth. I made a decision as my career built up in the last, 10 years, I think especially, of kind of being more and more known in volunteer engagement sector. There aren't very many of us who do this specialty. There's a ton of consultant agencies that do general nonprofit consulting. Many of them say that they also consult on volunteer engagement, and I've never found one that's good at it. I've sometimes worked alongside consultants with clients where they're consulting on, say, program design, just something I could do, but maybe they're the specialist in it, and I'm the specialist in volunteer engagement, and it's been great to work with them and expand my networks and get those contacts, and then we can, refer other things to each other because we know our specialties. But time and time again, I see that people, nonprofit agencies that are generally for nonprofits, typically don't have a CVA in-house. So I'm Dana Corley-Litwin, CVA, Certified in Volunteer Administration. That's the only global professional standard of you are an expert in this. You can go to cvacert.org to learn about that accreditation. There's very often marketing associates or interns or lower consulting associates who really don't know anything and about volunteer engagement, have not been involved with volunteer engagement with some of these larger general firms that, quite frankly, don't have the expertise to talk about it. I also see that in webinars. I see a lot of webinars from tech companies who, especially for, different kinds of nonprofit tech, who do not have, it's getting a little better. I'll say that the main volunteer management software companies are good at having actual experts, whether they're consultants or just, day-to-day practitioners, do their webinars. That's been getting better, but I'm seeing more and more kind of just people who have no business and no expertise, and they've probably scraped some crap together from ChatGPT. In one case, I found that a non-American volunteer management software company had just directly plagiarized from me about 6 or 7 years ago, and I had to kind of take them to account and send a cease and desist and write a lot of legal letters to them. And they kept pinging it back and forth about, oh, well, we just hired a contract writer to write our blog about volunteer engagement. And the contacted the contract writer, and she said, oh, no, I'm just a contract writer. They're the ones that hired me. So it just kind of bounced back and forth. So I'd say if someone is wanting to be a consultant, if you're a CVA, freaking go for it, man. We know that you're the expert. There's ways to be an expert without having a CVA. I'm not saying that's absolutely required, but to me, that's the easiest shorthand of like, oh, okay, at least they know what they're talking about versus they're a marketing intern fresh out of college who studied marketing and thinks that, there's an aspect to marketing that's important to volunteer engagement. And I've talked about that on my channel and I've had guests talk about that, but that's not the be all end all, that it is a real career. You need to have real experience and expertise to do it. And that I'm just seeing both in the encouragement of people I've mentored or maybe consider me a mentor, whether it's been formally through Alive or other professional associations, mentorship programs. I see them start to step into consulting and I'm really excited. And then the next day I get a spam email from the newest pop-up software company that says they have somebody I've never heard of who has no accreditation in anything trying to tell me how to recruit more volunteers.
Interesting.
Am I too grouchy? Am I being too Oscar the Grouchy?
Honestly, fuck it. Honestly, because this is, when I started the podcast,
I get to speak freely.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about these things because, listen, yeah. I'll be honest. I've had, I work a day job. So sometimes you got to watch what you say.
Yeah.
And I've had people that have come on this podcast and they've got day jobs and they've got, you know,
You got to protect yourself. Yeah.
Right. We're all a part of the hypocrisy of life when it comes to these things. But this is the type of stuff because I think there's a realness to the nonprofit space. And I know you've had moments. Well, I've never even asked you this, but I know you've had moments of people that say, they're like, oh, you work in the nonprofit space, and they have really not much of an idea. So for people that are in this space, we know some of the struggles that can be, whether we have a deep love for the mission, the people we're working with, et cetera, et cetera. But there's still a lot of bullshit that happens in this particular space. And I want to stick with your practice a little bit more, because you are diving really deep. When people are reaching out to you or organizations are reaching out to you, are they simply trying to figure out how to manage volunteer programs? Are they trying to use their money better? Are they seeking something completely different? Because it can feel like at time all nonprofit consultants can be placed in a couple of boxes. But every nonprofit is different. So how does that even look like when an organization reaches out to you and they're like, hey, I'm looking for what?
Most of the time that I get contacted through my website contact page, for example, danalitwin.com or danalitwinconsulting.com, I have a few URLs that point in that direction. If people hear something about me or priceless advice or whatever, it all points to the same website. Most of the time I get inquiries, and again, they're coming from around the world, not in a spam way, in a very genuine way, more and more frequently, is that it is about volunteer engagement. They know that's my specialty. That's not the only thing I can do for them. But again, most of the consultants in volunteer engagement, we all know each other. We all know each other in North America at a certain level. We all know each other around the world because it's very specialized to nonprofit work. And it's the kind of specialization that a lot of organizational leaders don't understand they need. And very often it's someone who's a coordinator or a middle manager. Sometimes it's someone who's a director who's on the leadership team that reaches out. Hey, we're going to, most often it's something like, we want to update our program. We want an overhaul. Once in a while, early in my career, I really was the specialist in creating a custom volunteer program for that organization from scratch. That's what I did with agencies that I worked with at my jobs. It just happened to be what I fell into, is I can build something from the ground up that works for you. And these are the kind of interviews or questions or surveys that I need to do with your volunteers and staff and board to get an idea of how it's going to work best for you. And I'll help write a handbook or that. But usually it's updating a current thing that isn't working anymore. They've been doing the same thing over and over again for a long time. And nobody has either the ideas to do something different, or what happens a good percentage of the time is that coordinator or manager that reaches out to me just has good ideas, but they're not being respected or heard or valued internally. So I have the best time when I'm on retainer or doing a special project. Those are the two most common things, where I'm on a monthly retainer for like 5 to 10 hours a month at my hourly rate. I have a lot of clients where I'm on retainer and they can just call me up or have a meeting, and other clients where, you know, I'm working on a specific project, or like I'm helping right now with an AmeriCorps planning grant. Like we have something with a deadline and deliverables and milestones and things. But it really comes down to, very often, because I'm the well-known consultant that they're paying money to come in and say something, a lot of the time I'm just amplifying what their in-house expert, volunteer coordinator, or manager, whether they're a CVA or not, has wanted to change. But I'm the nice, fancy, expensive outsider expert that says, guess what? Not only are these this person's good ideas, I'm going to use my expertise to build on those good ideas and help build out the infrastructure and the processes and the policies and the systems that make that make sense and make that work. So I've designed my consultancy to be, at this point, highly customized. I have certain things that are foundational concepts, like my three C's of happy volunteers, or three C's of a happy team, which is comfort, convenience, connection. So I'll weave that. That's my most popular webinar. It's what I first broke through with as a topic, speaking at Points of Light in like 2014 or 2015, I think was the year. And so there, I have certain systems and templates and things that I know work, but I feel like my specialty is I customize it more to the client, and I also advise on what technology or VMS they're using. I work a lot with volunteer management software companies, both creating content for their training webinars, sometimes advising. I'm under some NDAs with some clients that are, you know, like tech startups or developing apps around it over the years. And that's something that I offer as a potential, you know, can we just take a look at how all your tech is working together? And I'm not a coder. I don't write code. I can play one on TV, but I've hired a lot. I've overseen the custom creation of volunteer management software with an agency I was with. I don't recommend that. I think you can buy one out of the box more easily these days. But, you know, a little more than 10 years ago, I was instrumental in a software company developing a customized system for a government agency. And that I learned a lot on that. And that's what kind of helped me get into this extra niche of volunteer management software, how it works, which one's going to work best with you for your organization without being, you know, being associated with several of those companies, without being beholden as a salesperson to any of those companies, and kind of staying brand neutral in what I recommend, including sometimes, you know what, Google Forms will be fine. You can use Google Sheets. Like maybe you can do something that's a free service and that'll be enough for you.
Okay.
That was a lot.
Well, I know for a fact, we have people that are listening to this episode right now, and they're like, I want to be a consultant. Yeah. They want to get out of the rat race to a degree, mm-hmm. and they want to kind of control their own destiny. I want to ask you for some advice. But before I do that, I'm going to tease that to get people to keep listening. Tell us, I'm going to ask it at the end, but how can people reach out to you? Like, what is the best way to connect with you, whether you're an individual, a person, or, you know, how can people learn more about what you do?
The best thing is just go to my website, danalitwinconsulting.com, LITWIN. That's how you spell Litwin. You can find me, stalk me very easily online on LinkedIn. I'm Gen X, so I still sometimes check in on Facebook. I post like my Tuesday tips and my videos to Facebook, and I belong to some groups. But I'm also on Blue Sky. I've pretty much left Twitter because it's a garbage fire and it wasn't working anyway. So, you know, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, finding me directly on my website. My email's super easy. It's my name, Dana, D-A-N-A, at danalitwin.com. So I've, you know, put my real self out there, not a doing business as name, for a reason, because my brand, such as it is, has been me, myself, and I. And there's been times where I've hired friends and colleagues to be associates or subcontractors for part of a job with a client with their specific expertise that take something off my plate, or I just know, you know what, they're going to be faster at this than me, and I'm happy to work with folks. But I kind of deliberately designed my practice to be at this individual, customizable level from the get-go, and that's what works for me for work-life balance as well. But if someone's wanting to get into consulting, you know, my big advice is to do what I do. And I talk about this all the time too. I have a webinar called Carve Your Own Path. That's pretty popular, about advancing your own career internally, or, you know, making the next step to another job or to consulting if you want to. And that is the best time to do consulting is when you have a steady paycheck somewhere else. Oh. If you can. So just like you, if you can, don't leave a job. You know, the best time to look for a new job is when you have a job. Mm-hmm. I very openly was side consulting and speaking at conferences in my previous 9-to-5 jobs, or sometimes 8-to-8 jobs, realistically, in the sector between commutes and everything. And the previous agency I was with for 9 years, I absolutely love Open Space Authority. And they were very supportive of professional growth. They had a fantastic company culture. It was a great leadership team. I was doing great, but I got to that point, we kind of touched on it earlier in the interview, of I'm getting so much demand to work as a consultant that it's going to start to hurt my full-time job. And also I'm exhausted, and that's not good for me. It's not good for my job, who I respect and love and like the people there. And I want to do a good job for them. So I gave them like 7 or 8 months notice in 2018 that I would be leaving the job in January of 2019 or at the end of the year, 2018 holiday year, to consult full time. And that was a specific decision where, again, my wife and I crunched the math. She has a job that makes more money than me, so I can wear that, you know, nonprofit executive costume and be kind of truthful about it, which is pretty much the stuff I'm in right now, wearing right now. But, you know, we crunched the numbers and we said, okay, if for some reason everything crashes, we didn't know 2020 was coming, but if for some reason you don't have this momentum of clients and pipeline and projects coming as steadily, we can afford, you know, she can afford to float me for a few years. And then, you know, maybe something has to change. And for whatever reason, I got busier than ever when COVID hit because places were panicking. And particularly in 2021 and 2022, after vaccines were more widely available and people were starting to, as much as they could, safely come back to in-person things or certain services that could only be in person, like working at a zoo. You have to kind of be on site and work with the animals and the people who were there to see the animals. So I was getting clients like that, that were like zoos and museums and things kind of coming back, trying to come back in person. And that's been steady enough that, you know, this right now I'm trying to decide, okay, what kind of business upgrade can I level up to in 2026? And there's a few choices on the table, and I'm under some NDA, so I can't talk about all of them specifically, but something or other will be a big change for how I do my consulting and the size of the business in the next year or two. That's for sure. And the next few months will decide exactly what that looks like. But for anyone starting out, and again, I directly mentor several people. JPP was directly mentored by my friend Aaron Spink, and you know I've known Jessica Peng Parks for a while too. But seeing people start to get into consulting, start it part time, do speaking, get your name out there, do webinars, do conferences, but also, and this speaks to what's going to be coming out on my Priceless Advice channel in October with Severina Ware. Know your worth. It doesn't do any consultants anywhere in the business any good if you're doing too many things for free. So value yourself. Add, you know, values, especially as women in the world, we tend to be undervalue ourselves and our worth and get undervalued by and underpaid by other people making those decisions. So know your worth, stick to it. And I get a lot of requests by small local associations. Can you, you know, virtually or in person appear at this and we'll cover travel, but we can't pay you. And I'm at a point now in my career where I get to say, here's some people more local to your state that maybe have less travel expenses that I trust to do this, but these are my fees and this is what it costs. And here, you know, again, I try to redirect them to free or low cost resources, but it hurts everybody if people are, you know, doing webinars and presentations almost always for free. And instead of just saying that some of the best consulting advice I got, because I have friends who are consultants in very different sectors, but they also get asked to do pro bono work sometimes. And they said, you know, decide if 10% of your time can be pro bono, then cap it at that. Okay. And who's going to be the receiver of that? So the majority of my personal pro bono time goes towards my professional association Alive, the Association of Leaders and Volunteer Engagement. I was on the board for the max of 6-year term. I was a past president in 2019.
Who's the new executive director? What's her name?
Nicole R. Smith.
Nicole Smith. I like her podcast too. Mm-hmm.
I love her podcast too. And that's someone else that I'm happy to have been like a mentor to her career. And the story comes up every once in a while, but it was 6 or 7 years ago when I first got in touch with Nicole, and she reached out to me and we started talking, and she said, so what's this thing called Alive? And so I actually introduced
Get out of town. I didn't know that.
nobody knowing that she'd be the executive director. I was like, you should really join Alive. They've got a lot of cool things going on. And then she became on the board. And then when the position was available, she retired, you know, she resigned from the board in order to compete for the executive director position, which she's doing a great job at. And I'm excited that she's in that position. And, you know, so as these as you're thinking about being a consultant, does the math? Do the numbers work? Are you going to endanger yourself or your family by taking too much of a risk? Do it with some sort of safety net whenever, if that's possible. It may not be possible. So if it's not possible and you just got laid off and you're thinking, maybe this is the time I really try to pump up my consultant business, then go all in on it. You know how much work it takes to do a podcast. I know how much work it takes to do weekly videos and monthly interviews. Swim Kareem has been featured on my channel.
Oh yeah, putting that in the show notes.
putting that in the show notes. So you know, we had such a great conversation. It's like, let's continue the conversation. But that's the thing, is really see if the numbers work. Start small. Build up your brand and your business while you have some other income, some other job going on, ideally in the sector, to kind of back up your reputation that you're still doing day-to-day stuff and solving day-to-day problems. And I've also seen that some of the top consultants had developed fantastic systems over, you know, years or decades that are modular, that are, you know, templates of things that are extremely useful. I'm one in my own person in this company. I have some of that, but I focus on the specialty of customizing. So Figure out where you are in the ecosystem. What's your specialty? Mm-hmm. What are you best going to be known for? So to your earlier point, Swim, of, you know, sometimes you seem to occupy a lot of spaces. People who are doing volunteer engagement consulting or volunteer management consulting, whatever they're calling it, our work overlaps in some ways, but we all have something a little bit different to offer. And again, at a certain level, both in the States and around the world, those of us who know each other are like, oh, you know what? I may be not the best for this, but maybe Toby Johnson or Beth Steinhorn is, because I know their specialties or the way they have their modules and their e-learning and their templates set up, like that's going to be a better fit for you. Or I don't have time right now. Talk to, you know, so-and-so or so that's on the East Coast. It's better if you talk to an East Coast person. Here's that person's name. So we refer a lot of business to each other when we know someone else is maybe a better fit. And once in a while, we each go for an RFP and one of us gets it and like, oh, cool, you got that job. Oh, cool, I put in for that. So kind of, again, keeping it as cooperative and not competitive, I think is the healthy thing to do, because there's such a hustle and grind culture, talking about the gig economy and like, I want to be an influencer. I don't have my name. I am delighted that many people that I consider mentees or up-and-coming colleagues or friends are doing their own YouTube stuff. Or, you know, JPP herself going into YouTube Shorts. We've had very honest conversations. We hung out a lot at Points of Light, which is fantastic. And you know, she knows I do longer form videos. She's doing shorts. You know, Angela Williamson is starting in her consultancy. She's been a friend, and I think she looks up to me as an inspiration and a mentor. I'm pretty sure. I'm not speaking out of turn. And so it's nice to see her starting, you know, people starting to get into podcasts or videos. I'm really excited that my colleague in Australia, Tracy O'Neill, who was one of, I think, the first two people to get their CVA in Australia, she's just launched her consultancy. So if anyone from Australia reaches out to me, it's like, oh, I'm going to point them towards Tracy or Martin J. Cowling, who are my friends and colleagues who are in that part of the world that are just going to know those systems better than me. Like, I don't have to have everything. So let go of the idea as a consultant that you have to be everything to everybody. Know your expertise, know your strengths, know where you could learn more, and always be open to learning from each other all the time. And, you know, don't steal shit. Don't rip shit off.
Don't
steal shit. Yeah. And I haven't, you know, that hasn't been a problem with someone that I've known closely in a while. Once in a while, something pops up where there was an organization in Oregon that I got an email for, because I had done the 3 C's for them many times over the years. And then I got an email that one of their board members was going to do, you know, something. It wasn't quite called the 3 C's, but it was using the words comfort, convenience, connection. And I suddenly got all these emails from all these other colleagues going, did you see what just happened?
People talk.
Yeah, people talk. So we all know each. So that's the thing. Like, keep it cool in school, everybody. We all talk to each other. We all know each other. There's not a culture of like backstabbing or grabby hands or any of that. Like, we all respect each other, and enough to say, you know what, Beth's going to be better at that than I am, because it's in Colorado, because it's, you know, this kind of municipality she's worked with before, because this kind of organization she's worked with before. And that's what happens to me. My colleagues have sent me great clients that, you know, I was going to be a better fit than they were. And I think just being honest with yourself about what you're good at and what you could be better at, and think about what's your specialty in the ecosystem. And I found a really nice niche in expanding out from it, maybe a little bit in 2026 is a possibility, but, you know, maybe I retire in a couple of years. We'll see. We'll see what happens with life, because I got other stuff going on. This isn't the only thing in my life.
My gosh, it's crazy, because
I don't even have kids, man. You've got a kid. I don't even have human children to worry about. I've just got pets.
I'll trade them. Maybe we can switch. I don't know.
happy wife, happy life. That stays true across the gender spectrum.
Shout out to your wife. And I want to give it real fast, because you dropped a lot of names. Aaron Spink, I want to give a shout out. Nicole Smith, Severina. Mm-hmm. I got to get her on.
Severina Ware.
Severina, yes. I got to get her on. Shout out to Beth, Toby, mm-hmm. Angela, Tracy, mm-hmm. Martin. A lot of these people are names that I stalk them. They do not know me. I haven't had a lot of interactions with them. I got Faza coming
Faiza.
On.
Yeah, Faiza's great.
Faiza coming on.
She's
on the
a
next
good close
episode
friend, too. Yeah.
As well. So shout out to all these folks. I just sent her the questions for mm-hmm. next episode a little bit here in a couple of weeks. Liz, let me, we don't have enough time.
Oh.
I really, because I was like, there's so many more questions I could be asking. I gotta stop myself. I'm like a kid eating ice cream. I gotta stop myself before I eat too much. Let me end with this here, because I want to, one more time, let people know how to reach out to you. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it here in a second. We love a good nonprofit horror story.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Spooky Halloween.
This is the time. Because, you know, like we've been saying, like it gives us the ability to shine a light on some of the real challenges that can happen in the nonprofit space, the volunteer management space. Can you share a story, a nonprofit horror story with us?
I can't. I mean, I got a few in my back pocket. We kind of talked earlier about the recent client I was working with in 2024, just month-to-month retainer, like, you know, no big obligation. And that's, again, that's one of my favorite ways to work, because people can just dip in and out, and I've got a little stream of income advising folks, and that's comfortable for me. So they had their budget cut 47% as they went into 2025. That's one horror story. Probably a worse horror story is the absolute tragedy that was beyond just about everybody's control. But I had a hugely successful project for about a year and a half, a few years ago, with the GLAZA, the Greater Los Angeles Zoo Association, for the LA Zoo. The LA Zoo, much like the San Francisco Zoo, where I have previously worked, I've worked a lot in conservation. That's another kind of specialty, is I've worked primarily with conservation agencies, not exclusively. So that's another little like niche that I'm in, is, you know, environmental conservation and animal welfare, things like that. Anyway, so there's a split with many municipal zoos. There's the city, the local city that manages part of the zoo, and there's a nonprofit that administers typically most of the employees, animal care, docents, volunteer programs, things like that. That's true in San Francisco with the city and the Zoological Society. It's true. It has been true with GLAZA in the city of LA. However, there's been, a very focused political wedge and targeting thing happening with the LA City Council, where they recently cut their just in, I think, June of this past year, May or June, they cut their contract. The city of Los Angeles wants to take over all of the zoo management, and they essentially destroyed and disbanded their nonprofit, which had been successful, which was doing better because of the help that I gave them as a consultant in the midst of the pandemic, which zoos and museums and things like that are hit hardest when people, you know, the public can't show up and participate with them. So we were actually doing really well. And it was just this pure political division that had existed among certain local LA politicians and city council members and financial interests that they were aligned with that were not going to profit and benefit if a nonprofit kept running things. And so that's probably my worst horror story, that the organization that had been primarily the support function and most of the work and all of the volunteer services work for the Los Angeles Zoo was cut off from its one function and contract and then disbanded a month later, because what's a Greater Los Angeles Zoo Association going to do when the city doesn't let you run the zoo anymore? And because it wasn't because of incompetence, it wasn't because of budget, it was purely, again, policy choices have consequences. Political choices have consequences. And it wasn't even that much of a bipartisan thing in this case. It was more of an individual politician, council person, ego and financial incentive thing, that their people that they know and they themselves would benefit more if certain things were handed back to the city and certain other things were privatized. And that's big, and that's a horror story. That's not something any Friends of or Botanical or Zoological Society or Museum Association Friends of ever wants to hear a story that your whole purpose has just been erased.
Right. I'm going to find some information about that. If you happen to have any good articles that you trust, sources that you trust on that, Dana, feel free to send it over to me. I could put it in the show notes. I'll do my own research.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff too. But it was from people that I worked with directly that I know. That's what happened. I reached out to them, like, how's it going? It's like, oh, the city's doing this stupid thing. I'm like, that is a very stupid thing for the city to do. But, you know, at least they're carrying over the new departments of the zoo that are now handling things that the nonprofit handled. They are aligned, again, at this individual working level. The people doing the jobs together didn't want this schism to happen. Yeah. You know, the zoo departments working together on the ground didn't want this to happen. This was a decision made at a higher level of city politics. But I know that the systems that I set up to succeed for docents and volunteers have been handed off to that other city department. And when I was working with them a few years ago, the people in that department seemed excited and enthused to do those things. So I'm hoping that some of the good carries over with this change and how that organization is managed. But it's really tragic that, you know, that's speaking of a lot of people losing their jobs. If your whole organization has no reason to exist anymore, everybody's gone. Yeah.
Dana Litwin with Dana Litwin Consulting. This was a meat sandwich. I mean,
this is a thick soup. This is a thick stew. Yeah.
I freaking love it. I feel like I had a bunch of notes. I feel like we're in a dark lit cigar shop. I feel like we're just talking the talk. Honestly, yeah. This was so.
This is the real tea being spilled.
High level. One more time, how can people reach out to you? Because I know people are going to want to talk to you. People want to work with you. And there's a reason why people want to work with you. You just displayed over the last 60 minutes. How can people reach out to you one more time?
Dana@danalitwin.com. Email's good. Go to my website, danalitwinconsulting.com, or just, you know, danalitwin.com goes there. Find me on LinkedIn, Dana Corey Litwin, or just Dana Litwin. If you find me on the socials, it's either Dana Corey Litwin CVA. You go to my YouTube, Dana's Priceless Advice. You know, just go at Dana's Priceless Advice on YouTube. You find my channel. You find when I've talked to you, Swim, and your great Tuesday tips and things we've done on that channel. And yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So if there's a time and things are looking really different in the upcoming new year, then maybe we circle back and get back on the show and continue where we left off and see what's new and what's changed and what's the same.
Don't say it, because I will do a part two.
Don't threaten me with a good time, man.
I haven't done a part two yet with a guest, but this is the energy that I need. Thank you so much for being here on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. One more time, Dana Litwin. Information in the show notes. Be sure to follow us on Instagram. Be sure to follow us on all the social medias. We got it all in the show notes, and we'll be seeing you on the next episode. Dana, this has been a blast.
Thank you so much, Swim, for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to more. So, hey, everyone, tune in and get in touch with both of us for more info.